Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday. It is the 8th of January, 2021. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Happy Friday. Good to be here.
Happy Friday to you. And as per tradition, you know, a long tradition from last year, we are going to kick off with, we're kicking off today with Security Friday. So we have a little bit of news and some updates and, spoiler alert, a practical tip at the end of Security Friday to help you improve on security, like making sure that you're keeping your credit card number safe. Right, Andrew?
Yeah, we got two of our stories are heavy hitters for 2021. We're going in strong.
Oh, yes.
So the first one is a data breach, or a data leak. I think this might have been a leak. So this is a payment processor called JustPay. Mm-hmm. It's a payment processor for companies like Amazon, Swiggy, Make My Trip, and other companies. So they've reported a data breach that leaked the data of over 100 million credit and debit card holders.
Yikes.
And they say, yeah. So they say this breach occurred on August 18th of last year, and it includes a lot of leaked data. Well, they're calling it, this is non-sensitive data. So so I'll just start out with by saying the leaked data, which includes masked card information, card expiry information, phone numbers, and email addresses. And that's why they kind of call it non-sensitive. The sensitive data, like they made this specific. So data like your full card number, order information, card PIN numbers, and passwords were not leaked.
Okay. So that's important. That makes it really helpful and a little slightly less alarming, because it at least it wasn't sort of the good stuff, I guess, that they got a hold of.
Yeah.
So that does help a little.
So, yeah. So Business Insider wrote this up. A security researcher whose name I cannot pronounce.
Okay.
He found this information on the dark web for sale. It sounded like maybe he was a little worried about it. He said, the company only masked 6 out of 16 digits for the card numbers. And he says, well, this is good. The rest of the data could be exposed if the hackers are able to reverse engineer the hashing algorithm. So I guess we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Then, that's an interesting tip, and this points back to something we talk about all the time, which is if you store your credit card information as an item in your password manager, if your password manager allows for that, then you don't have to store it remotely. And then if a place that stores payment information were to have something leak or have something hacked, they wouldn't have your credit card data, because you don't have to save it there. I know it's nice and convenient, but it's the same amount of clicks to go, hey, remote place, use my credit card, as it is to go, hey, password manager, fill it in. So that can be helpful.
Yep.
Next up. Go ahead.
Well, just as a quick alternative to that, another service we had mentioned was privacy.com.
Yes.
So you just hook your bank account to it, and then you can generate virtual card numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do burner cards, which are just a one-time card, and then it just deactivates. Or you can lock it to a specific merchant. So you can have an Amazon card, an Apple card, et cetera, et cetera. So that's another good alternative.
And part of the reason that's a good alternative is because in this case, let's say somebody were to get that Amazon card and tried to use it somewhere else, it wouldn't work, because it's only meant to work at Amazon.
Exactly.
So that's another handy thing. We've talked about privacy.com before, and we should probably, I expect that will become another practical tip in the future. I think we've chatted it up a couple of times, but it's just so useful and just continues to be. So definitely good. So now I'll move on to the next thing, which is, again, talk about 2021 coming out swinging. We have some shiny new malware for the year.
Yes, yeah, so that was the first, well, actually, no, that wasn't the first data breach of 2021, because like I said, no. That was in August.
Yeah.
However, this is the first Mac malware that was spotted in 2021. So Patrick Wardle over at Objective-C wrote this up. He's a pretty good security researcher.
Yes.
So Patrick. This malware, yeah, this Mac malware is called Electro Rat.
Okay.
And its primary goal is to steal personal information from cryptocurrency users. So the quote that I shared from him said, these applications were promoted in cryptocurrency and blockchain-related forums such as Bitcoin Talk and Steam Coin Pan.
Okay.
And these promotional posts regarding these infected applications, they were published by fake users. And they were trying to get people to browse the app web pages and download the app without knowing that they were actually installing malware.
Okay.
So if you have been on some of those forums, be careful.
Yeah, it can be sketchy. Always a thing you have to worry about with those. So, that's very exciting. One of the things I can tell you, there are malware scanners out there. The first thing you can do in order to keep this from happening is A, be aware that this is what's happening. That's first. Be aware that it's a possibility that this is a thing that could be happening. If you are on forums like these and you see that somebody has posted something, you might have to do a little bit of research before you just go install stuff willy-nilly. That's usually a sure way to end up with malware one way or another, regardless of what forum it is that you got the link from. Find a utility that will do a light malware scan for you. A really common one is Malwarebytes. It's free. It's easily available. And like I said, it does come in a free version. So they will scan for at least the highest level stuff. If you find that this is a thing that is happening regularly, or if you have a need to be downloading things from some of these sites where some of the results may be unreliable, you may want to either, you know, upgrade that or pay for something that's a little stronger as far as protection. So those are some things that you can do for that.
So reading the blog post, it sounds like there may have been several apps that were doing this. The one that he dug into was called E-Trader.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of tools, there is this online-only tool. It's a scanner, file scanner. It's called VirusTotal. And that's the tool he was kind of working with to, you know, see if it was malicious or not.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And, that's a good thing I think about this is, you know, you definitely should download something like Malwarebytes. But if you just want to quickly scan a disk image that you downloaded, you can also just upload it to VirusTotal.
Okay.
And it will give you results from a whole bunch of different kinds of vendors.
Yeah, and that's good, particularly because you can just get the quick scan and find out from a bunch of different places what the verdict is, as opposed to just one. So that's also very handy. Thanks for that. And our last bit of security news has to do with messaging.
Yes. So this is an update to WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. AKA Facebook. Facebook owns WhatsApp. So they have... I got to get Facebook in there.
Yep.
So WhatsApp recently updated its privacy policies, and it's not good. So this was written up by Charlotte. Let's see what it says. So it says, the full privacy policy, it will take effect on February 8th, and it says, so basically WhatsApp is going to start sharing your personal information with Facebook, and you don't really have a choice, I guess. If you don't want to do this, they will delete your account, which is very heavy-handed, but not unlike Facebook, I think.
Yes. let me check my notes here. Yes, that is correct. That is exactly what Facebook is probably up to. Yeah. We've seen this sort of thing from them before.
Some of the information that will be shared will include your account registration information, like your phone number, transaction data, service-related information, information about how you interact with others, including businesses, when you're using their services, mobile device information, your IP address, and other information identified in the privacy policy. So too much is what I'm saying.
More than anyone should. Yeah. I'm glad they're having to point it out, but yeah, it's not great. So, yeah.
And Charlotte says, updated yesterday. She and probably other users are already seeing warning messages in the app, just letting you know we're changing things, and you can tap agree or delete your account.
These are your choices.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear, this is all you get. Yeah, you can agree that they can have all of that, or you can agree that you are done with WhatsApp. These are your choices. So, you know.
And it's not easy. Like, I think, I'm sure we've mentioned before, WhatsApp, I don't think, is used a whole lot in the U.S. It is just one among many messaging apps. But in the U.K., where Charlotte lives, and pretty much everywhere else in the world, except maybe China, WhatsApp is the de facto default messenger.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be hard to switch over to something else.
Yeah, in a lot of places. You know,
like, get everyone else to switch too.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, that, I think that's the part that's almost more interesting to me, is what this is going to mean in a lot of other places, because here, that's not, like, it's not as big. It's one of, you know, like you said, one of many choices. So how this shakes out in the rest of the world is going to be, I think, pretty interesting. So that brings us to today's practical tip. So, pitter patter, let's get at her, as they say on Letterkenny. I've been watching a lot of Letterkenny lately, so don't be surprised if I show up Monday and just say, "How are you now?" Anyway, we have a tip for what you can use instead of WhatsApp if what you like out of WhatsApp is that it is encrypted.
Yes, we've talked about these apps before, but this is a good reminder. Two of the apps that are being recommended as an alternative, privacy apps, privacy-oriented end-to-end encrypted messaging apps, are Signal and Telegram. So I haven't read a whole lot about Telegram. I thought that the last time I heard, they didn't share their encryption, I think. Like, they weren't open sourcing it, something like that. Anyway, sorry. But Signal is the one that they have been audited, I think, and their code is open source. Yeah. So that is great.
Yeah, and it's, I think one of the things about Signal is that I want to say it's on by default. The security and the encryption is all on by default, and I believe they're the ones that publish, like, this is how we build the security, so that it's open to review from other people, and you're able to see, you know, others can see it is open source. It's free, and anybody that wants to can go take a look at what's in there. It's put together by a nonprofit, is the organization behind making sure that it stays maintained and everything. So it doesn't have ads or affiliate marketing or anything like that. So they're not scraping any of the data out of it.
Yeah.
And I think they're one of the ones that can be the default messages app on Android, I think. I don't remember.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
So I apologize if that's incorrect, but I think that's the other thing I remember reading about it, was that one of its advantages was that it could be set as a default. So.
And speaking of Signal open sourcing, to be fair to WhatsApp, their messages are also end-to-end encrypted. And I'm pretty sure, 90% sure, Signal actually worked with them on their encryption algorithm.
Okay.
But as a lot of security researchers and privacy activists are wanting to remind us, even if your chats are end-to-end encrypted, the metadata surrounding it, like what Facebook wants to collect, mm-hmm. that is still pretty powerful stuff for tracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the data about your messages is also a really compelling profile for Facebook to get a hold of and sell to other people. Where they are, when people, like, especially in aggregate, right? Because they have data about when everybody is on WhatsApp and how active they are at different times of day, and probably some sort of location information about where those messages are and things like that. So the metadata of that is also interesting. And I just, I'm springing this on you, Andrew, because we mentioned it a little bit. And so I want to talk a tiny bit about encryption. This is going to be very, very high level. And I'm not, there's no homework, there's no quiz. But feel free to jump in. So people talk about end-to-end encryption, and what that means is the messages on my phone, if I'm using something that's end-to-end encrypted and I'm sending it to Andrew, then the message is encrypted on my device and it's encrypted on Andrew's device all the way through. And then the other thing you have to look at is sometimes there's a distinction between it's encrypted on my device, and when I send it to Andrew, it's encrypted on Andrew's device, but it is not encrypted in between. And so some things
that's a good point.
Some things have encryption, but don't have it encrypted all the way through. And particularly, like, if you are storing things remotely, which a lot of us do, if you're using Dropbox or you're using something else, you know, OneDrive or Box or any of those kinds of things, if you have a cloud storage solution, like maybe used through work for whatever, you need to make sure that not only is your traffic to them encrypted if this is sensitive data, but you also need to make sure that it's encrypted in transit, is what that's called, between you and the server, and then also at rest. So if I'm not using that file on the server, if it's my file and Andrew breaks in and Andrew gets that file, if I'm not using it, is it encrypted while it's at rest, meaning nobody else is touching it? And so all Andrew has is a blob of useless data because he doesn't have anything that allows him to decrypt. So that's the other piece that you kind of have to think about, is like figuring out exactly where the encryption stops and starts in the process. If that's a thing that you really need for whatever reason it might be, maybe you just want to make sure that your data is protected. Maybe it matters because you're talking about things that need to be held behind some level of security. Maybe you deal with secure documents, you have financial data or personal data about customers or things like that. You need to make sure that all of that data is remaining safe. And in order to do that, you need to know what level of encryption. You don't have to know what algorithm they're using. You don't know how to build your own security testing device or anything like that. But just have an awareness of when that stuff is locked up and when it isn't. That's really important.
Yeah, I'll add a little bit onto that.
Please do.
So we do see that with Apple. So that's what Apple does. They encrypt, like if you're storing things in iCloud, they encrypt it through the air in transit, and they encrypt it on their servers. But that's different than end-to-end encryption.
Yes.
So with end-to-end, that means like the keys used to authenticate and work with the algorithm are generated by your device and are stored on your device. They don't go through the air. They don't go through someone's servers. It's just, it stays locally, kind of like the secure enclave.
Yes. It's very much secure enclave. Yeah. So, and it is important, again, like we always say on Security Friday, like the point is awareness. Like, especially if you have data that you know needs to be protected or secured in some fashion, just have an awareness of when it is secure and when it's not. And there may be times when it isn't, and you just need to be aware of that. So,
yeah. Actually, like, just real quick, this is something I just thought of, too. Something else that I have written about is If you're looking for encrypted stuff, you'll probably see marketing terms, and they are pure marketing terms, like bank level encryption, or we use military grade encryption.
Oh, yeah.
So what that means is that usually bank level encryption usually refers to an encryption algorithm called AES 128. Mm-hmm. And military grade is stronger than that, is AES 256. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah. Like bank level encryption is still good. But yes. I think most end-to-end encrypted stuff uses 256.
Yeah. The other thing I would point out is that the first time I saw bank level encryption, I think was what the pitch was. I had to laugh because I had just gone a couple of go-rounds with the bank about how my password could only be like 10 characters or something, and it couldn't have punctuation in it or some dumb thing, you know, like that. So, so the first time I saw that, I laughed because I'm like, seriously, you won't let me have a 16 character password, and you're going to tell me that bank level encryption is so awesome? Sweetie, no. Yeah. If you have questions about this, if you want to hear us talk more about encryption, I don't know why that would be, but if you do, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com, particularly if you have more questions or if there's something that you would like us to talk about. Particularly, you know, sometimes rolling over the calendar makes people think about like making some new habits or changing some routines. And if there's something we can help you with on the security front, we would very much like to do that. Observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by for Security Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a good weekend, everyone.
Yes, I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you again on Monday. Just follow-up reminder, next week we are going to talk a whole lot about CES and things that we've seen that are coming out, so keep an eye out there. I will talk to you again on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and seriously, let's be careful out there.